Gay people love puns.
I'm dead. We have to stop this podcast.
Well, this book causes Satanism.
What is left for us to rant about?
There is nothing straight about Plum Velvet.
You shouldn't have been drinking when I said that.
Monocles are impractical, but hot. I don't for a second believe that she is a straight person.
I mean, I'm definitely here for bisexual Minerva McGonagall.
Let's talk about Harry Potter.
Hello and welcome to The Gaily Prophet, a humorous yet ruthless podcast where two queer IRL witches talk about Harry Potter. I am Lark Malachi Gray.
And I'm Jessie Blount. And today we actually have a very special episode. Lark was joined by the very lovely ladies over at the Her Dark Materials podcast. There was a cool conversation about demons and Patronuses and all kinds of fun stuff. I was not around for this recording, so this is the only bit of me that you'll hear in this episode, but it's excellent. You guys are really going to love it.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And I don't think that, listeners, I don't think you need to have read the His Dark Materials books to enjoy this episode. I do think that we should give, like, the tiniest explanation of what, like, a demon is, because I think that's the only thing that you really need to know to be able to appreciate the conversation that we're having here.
Yes. Yeah. So in the world of His Dark Materials, humans have demons, which are a physical manifestation of a part of your soul that takes the shape of an animal.
Yep. And are the opposite gender of the human in question, which does come up in this conversation also.
Yeah, I had some thoughts about that too.
Yeah, I honestly think that's all you need to know to be able to appreciate what's going on here. Yeah, we talked about, I mean, you'll hear it, but we got into the similarities and differences between Patronuses and demons, and we gave some Patronuses to His Dark Materials characters, and we gave some demons to Harry Potter characters. There was a unexpectedly excellent conversation about Voldemort that was, like, mind-blowing for me, personally.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that, too. I'm like, oh, so good.
You know what? Okay. I'm excited to hear that. We should totally talk about your thoughts on that, and we'll put it at the end of this episode. So stay tuned at the end for that. But also, because at the end of this episode, we're going to give you updates on, like, fun stuff we've got going on this fall and, like, really cool stuff that we were up to this summer. Make sure you listen through. Also, if you love what you hear today, which you will, I was on an episode of Her Dark Materials that's coming out either yesterday or tomorrow. I can't remember, but, like, around now, almost simultaneously with this episode coming out. So you should definitely check that out. We talked about how the alethiometer and tarot are similar and different and all sorts of stuff with, like, symbolism and whatever. It was really fun.
I cannot wait to hear it, because in between the years when I was first reading Harry Potter, I became deeply obsessed with the His Dark Materials series, and I think the Amber Spyglass is maybe still in, like, my, like, top five books ever, and none of the Harry Potter books are, so yeah.
Yeah, for sure. With that, I'm going to, like, introduce our guests, and then you'll hear, like, a little twinkly sound, and then you'll be inside the episode. So here we go. Her Dark Materials is a His Dark Materials read-through podcast covering the Philip Pullman novels A Chapter at a Time, spoiler-free, as well as the BBC HBO TV series. This conversation is not spoiler-free. BT dubs, you may be spoiled by listening to this. It is hosted by Faye and Rach. Faye is a queer podcast producer and communications specialist. As well as working on Her Dark Materials, Faye hosts and produces Still Into You, a Paramore podcast, where she and her co-host Zach discuss every Paramore song in order. Rach works as an artist and designer and toy maker, and can usually be found embodying her inner craft goblin, making a mess and crafting cute things. She draws inspiration from nerdery, storytelling, and the natural world. Hello. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk with both of you.
Hello.
Thank you for having us. Hello.
Can you both say, like, which name belongs to which voice really quick?
Yeah. So I'm Faye. Hello.
And I'm Rachel. Hi.
Perfect. So let's just start with some, like, basic Harry Potter stuff. Tell me briefly about, like, your relationship with Harry Potter and your Hogwarts houses, and if you want to get, like, deep about it, you can tell me, like, your primary and secondary, but you don't have to.
Yeah. So I was obsessed with Harry Potter from when I was, like, a small child. My dad brought me the Philosopher's Stone home from the supermarket one day, and he was like, oh, I think you might like this. And I was like, you are right, Dad. And I literally read Harry Potter and nothing else. I'm going to say for the span of the book series, so, like, what was it, like, 10 years maybe, a little bit less than that, 7-8 years, and my mum was like, are you gonna read any other book ever? And I was like, I don't think I will. So I was obsessed for years and years and years. I went through, it just meant so much to me. Like, when I was in school, I got badly bullied, and it was, like, the kind of the only thing that I had that, like, made me feel like I had friends, like, and I adored it so much. And then I was saying to Rach actually earlier, I think, that I used to have, like, such an encyclopedic knowledge of Harry Potter, but because, and I've read it over and over again, but because I haven't read it in a long time, and because I'm, like, getting old, and my mental illness does not allow me to keep as many things in my brain anymore, so I feel like it's trickling away a little bit. Yeah. But it's interesting to revisit, because I've not really spoken about it in a long time.
Nice, nice. My relationship to Harry Potter came through via, as so many things did in my, like, childhood, via my sister, who borrowed the book from her friend Sean, and our cat destroyed it. So we had to buy our friend, a friend of the family, Sean. Poor Sean had a beautiful, we've realised it's one of those rare ones that has the picture of, we think it's Nicholas Flamel on the back. Yeah. It's like the ginger wizard on the back. And it's like, oh, that's a rare one. Might be worth something if our cat hadn't shredded it. So we bought her a new copy, but that probably is worth significantly less than the cat bitten one that we still have. And yeah, it was very much like my sister's thing. There was, like, a article in, like, the village newspaper, because the village bookshop, like, made a big deal of getting them in. We were, like, one of the only villages locally that had a bookshop, and, like, my sister queued at midnight to get the next release of one of the books, and, like, so there was a little picture of her in, like, the village newspaper. It was really cute. And we grew up very much, she read them first, I wasn't as big into reading. There's a few of the books where I saw the film first. But we grew up and we would usually do a lot of, like, reading on holidays in the caravan. So we'd be, like, caravanning around the British countryside, and we would sit next to the caravan and take it in turns to read, like, a few pages. Like, my mum and my dad might read, like, a full chapter out loud, and then I'd do, like, a couple of pages, and my sister would do a couple of pages. And so, like,
cute.
Very wholesome.
So wholesome. But
yeah, that's my relationship to the books. It's, like, it's very nested in, like, that, like, childhood thing. And then the audiobooks, Stephen Fry reading the audiobooks kind of was the soundtrack to me getting through uni, doing a lot of, like, repetitive work and just, yeah, listening to the audiobooks. So,
Rich,
very calming place for me now.
What you mentioned about your sister queuing up to get the books, I remember doing that with the Deathly Hallows, and I have, like, quite an impulsive nature, and I remember I got home from getting it and I was so obviously so excited. Opened it to the last page immediately, because that's apparently, I just wanted to ruin it for myself, and saw, like, the last line, and I was like, cool, ruined.
I mean, it's not much of a spoiler, isn't the last line just all was well?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Damn it, turned out okay.
Gonna turn out that way.
Turned out okay, which I could have probably guessed, but I was, like, scanning the last page and I was like, I need to stop doing that. I still do that now. Like, I'm ridiculous for, like, finding spoilers for things. I don't know. Just like to know what happens, I guess. I'm impatient, I think, is what I am.
I've gotten much more into spoilers, like, since the pandemic started, because I'm like, I can't, there's a lot that I can't handle anymore. So I'm like, actually, I'm looking this up before I consume this media, because I just want to be prepared.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
So what are your Hogwarts houses?
So I am a Ravenclaw. I've never, like, delved into, like, being something else as well. I remember always thinking I was a Ravenclaw, and then back when, like, Pottermore came out years ago, I went on that. It said I was a Ravenclaw, and I was like, that fits. And I've just stuck with that ever since.
Nice. That works for you. You're very, like, you're a very literary person. I always thought I was a Ravenclaw because I feel like I grew up with quite a lot of, like, big Hermione energy of being, like, quite an annoying goody-two-shoes. But I basically identified very strongly with, like, the Ravenclaw aspects of Hermione, despite the fact that she is obviously a Gryffindor. And, yeah, I was like, that's me. But, like, the older I get and the more I just, like, settle into who I actually think I am, it's just Hufflepuff. So very much Ravenclaw with a Hufflepuff rising is my nice. Is my vibe.
That's great. Hufflepuffs are the best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are here today to explore the relationships between demons and Patronuses and how they're alike and different and all of that, which I am just, like, so excited about. This is, like, the nerdiest thing, and I think it's going to be so
yes.
fun.
Yes.
So should we start just by going, like, round robin what everyone's demons are?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
So my demon is a duck. I just really, like, quick explanation. I love the water, knew that I couldn't have, I would have gone for, like, a whale or something, but, like, I knew I couldn't do that because I wouldn't be able to be far away from my demon. So ducks, you know, they live on land and they're in the water. And also my last name is Ducker, so I feel like it kind of works as well in that way.
Cute.
Mm-hmm. Mine is a very super basic house cat 1.0 tabby cat. Will sit there warming themselves under whatever heat source is nearby as I work. He's very much based on our, like, family cat that I grew up with. We've always been cat people, and there was no way my demon was ever not just going to be a cat. Just cool. nice and simple.
Mm-hmm. So before I talk about mine, I'm actually going to read us Jessie's because
she sent it.
So her demon is a red fox. And she said, I've always been fascinated with foxes. They're beautiful animals that seem between cats and dogs. They're excellent, cunning survivors living basically everywhere in the U.S., including cities. And when I first read the HDM series, I was around 14 or 15, a good age to imagine what my subtle demon would be. I also had a very chaotic home life in my teens, and the idea of part of me being tricksy and resilient and aloof really resonated. Despite my lifelong love of cats, I felt an affinity for something wild, something undomesticated, which, looking back, was also very teen angst of me. But as an adult, I still find that the idea fits me. Fox mythos from all over the world is that of a trickster, the question of friend or foe depending wholly on circumstance. As someone with many intersecting marginalized identities, I deeply relate to a symbol whose meaning is very fluid and ever-shifting.
Yes, that's incredible. Yes, I love that.
I have to rewrite my response now because that's one of the best responses I've ever heard. Right?
Jessie is, like, an intimidatingly good writer.
I love the, like, comparison. There were so many great things in that, but the comparison of foxes being in between cats and dogs, I'd never thought about that before, and that's so true.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible.
So I have, like, two answers to this. One is that one of my dogs, like, literally is my demon, like, all the time. I'm, like, something will happen and my partner just, like, looks at me and Rufio, and I'm just like, I know we share just one soul between the two of us. Like, we are the same person in, like, our anxieties, our excitement. Like, it's uncanny how much me and this dog are, like, just someone took something out of me and made it into a dog. But if I'm going more like zoomed out and like, what would my demon be? I think I'm going to go with raccoon.
Yes. Nice.
We're both like not for everyone, but the people that we are for, we're like very for, you know? Uh-huh. And they're just like really smart and only trust people who like really deserve to be trusted. They have very strong boundaries. And also they just like go with my aesthetic. So if I was like carrying a raccoon around all the time, it wouldn't like mess up my like gothness. So I like that too.
It's a very important aspect of it.
Love that. Oh, yes. Incredible. Ugh.
Cool. So now let's talk about what all of our patronesses are. I looked it up. It's patronesses and not patroni.
Mm,
it's a Greek word and not a Latin word, or the other way around. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Cool.
So yes, what are y'all's patronesses?
So Rach and I were chatting about this, and like I said to you, I've kind of like lost a lot of my Harry Potter knowledge over the years. And I used to be like... I remember being like set on what I thought or knew my Patronus was. I know that I did the like Pottermore quiz at one point, but you know, whether we actually accept that for what it is another story. But I was so obsessed with Hermione when I was a kid that I kind of identified with everything that she did. So, and then I was talking to Rach about it earlier and I was like, oh, I remember, you know, there was definitely a time in my life where my Patronus was an otter because of Hermione. And then, well, Rich was like, well, that kind of fits because it's also like a water-based creature as well. And I was like, mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I'm sticking with otter. It works.
Nice.
Mine has kind of like, well, again, same. I did the quiz and ignored the result because it gave me like a shock. And I was like, that doesn't feel useful. And I don't really relate to that. Like, I don't. Sure, whatever. And so my more like personal reason that I've come to is kind of linked into like how I think of Patronuses in terms of like the difference between how I would relate to a Patronus versus a demon as well, which I guess we'll get into later. But mine would be a lizard, specifically the kind that you find in Madeira on the clifftops, because I have like a really happy but also quite like melancholy and sad memory associated with that, which is that like one of the last things I did with my sister before she died was we tried to catch lizards while we were on holiday. We were trying to like persuade these lizards to come onto her scarf so that we could try and, we weren't actually trying to catch them, but try and catch these little like rock lizards. And so I can just imagine this lizard like skittering about and conjuring this really like powerful memory for me. So yeah, a lovely little Madeiran rock lizard.
Nice. I love that you're thinking about it too in terms of like a memory associated with it that would make it like more possible for you to cast the Patronus. That's very wise. And I've never heard anyone talk about it like that before.
Right. Rich is the wise one, you will see. I am the more like scattered, like just saying whatever comes to my brain. Part of the
Don't
pod,
set that
Rich is the wise
for
one.
Me. I can't live up to it.
I mean, just take the compliment.
Yeah.
This is a no compliment deflecting
take it.
Zone.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jessie's Patronus is a lioness. She said, I like the idea of being protected by a rad fucking big cat and rad ladies, which we all know lionesses are. And I've always had an affinity about lions, perhaps because my favorite childhood stuffed toy was a lion.
Oh,
that's
so
nice. I love
yes,
that.
Love that.
And I've always said that mine is always, I don't know when I started saying this, but at some point in the last like 10 to 15 years, that mine is a platypus because I just really feel an affinity for their like, what the fuckness,
yes.
You know? They also feel just like very queer as an yes. animal yes. and also they have like poison spurs and I feel like that really works with my like Slytherin rising, you know?
Yes.
So.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. I love that.
I like that.
Amazing.
So what do we think the differences between Patronuses and demons are?
So, Rach, you had a good answer for this earlier, so I want you to go first, and then I'll ride on your coattails.
Yeah, I mean, in trying to figure out what I thought, because it's been a while since I've thought about what my Patronus would be, because we've been so much in, like, demon land doing the Her Dark Materials podcast. We've been talking about demons so much, and we like, switch it up every week, because we kind of don't subscribe to the idea that your demon would necessarily settle full-time into one form, because you change so much. But it's been a while since I've like thought about, oh, why would my Patronus be a different animal? Because I know that it would. And for me, I think the idea is like a demon is a part of you that is like, it's a part of your personality. It's a part of your soul that just exists on the outside. So it's there with you all the time. And it's just existing. And whether you're like super happy with your demon or not, it is an example of like something within you that just exists constantly alongside you. But I feel like a Patronus is something that you like call on and take comfort in or from, and like confidence from and hope from. For me, a Patronus kind of, when I was thinking about it, it felt like maybe it ought to be something that conjures that like confidence and like hopefulness that you need to tackle a Dementor. And so for the one that I picked a memory that kind of similar to Harry's is like happy, sad, like it's powerful, but it has some like sadness to it, but that almost makes it more powerful. And so like picking something that kind of feels and like instills that like confidence and like hopefulness in you feels like perhaps more than like your demon, which feels like something that's just like, that's just a fact about you. Whereas maybe a Patronus is slightly different for what you need it for. But yeah. What do you guys think?
I was thinking along those lines, and I was thinking about the permanence of a demon. Like, your demon, if you're from Lyra's world, is always there. And we know what happens if people from Lyra's world don't have a demon. It's catastrophic to your life if you don't. And Patronuses, some people, you know, in Harry's world might never cast a Patronus. Like, it's a difficult spell. It might not be something that everyone can do. So I was thinking about how that kind of ties into these like worlds. And I just think that, kind of similar to what you were saying, Rich, your demon is there whether you like it or not. Whether you get on with your demon, whether you like what form it settled in, it's there and you can't change it. A Patronus is, I suppose, you can't choose what form your Patronus is, but you can inform it. It's more of a choice, I guess, because you could also choose to never cast a Patronus, therefore you would never have one.
And it can't talk back to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I think that feels really right to me. Like, I don't know that Patronuses are necessarily like a reflection of like who you are. They're maybe more like, I don't know, like aspirational in some ways too, where it's like a thing that you, that like makes you feel good. I think it's very inconsistent in the books, but like everything is really inconsistent in those books, so that's not surprising. So what Jesse said is that unlike adult demons, Patronuses can change with circumstances in a person's life. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're supposed to change, like given that Dumbledore is surprised that Snape is still just stolen Lily's Patronus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like pointed out that like what she would have said her Patronus was like at 14 or at like 24 versus now she's 36, I think, would be totally different, because like what she needs in a Patronus is different at, you know, different times in life. And that feels really right to me, because it, yeah, you know, like your Patronus is like something that will like protect you from depression, which is not the same thing as something that's like a piece of you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We had a listener be like, my Patronus would be a bottle of mood stabilizer.
Just like shaking around.
Yeah, which honestly seems like it would be so effective, because it's like hilarious too.
Exactly,
you know?
And,
like,
yeah.
That's so joyful. Ugh. Like, just thinking about how funny your Patronus will be the happy memory.
It's almost like where the Patronus and the ridiculous charm intersect.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Oh my God, that's so good.
Oh, I love that.
But yeah, I can definitely see, like, even almost like day to day, like needing something different from a Patronus, like depending on where you're at, like mental health wise, anywhere, how close or far you feel you are from the Dementors as it is, like, as to like what you need. Like, some days, for example, Jessie said that hers is a lion. Like, some days she might just, all she might need is a house cat to scare the Dementors off. And some days she might need the full badass lion. Like,
yeah,
it might like scale up and down. Cause I guess that works with the books, cause sometimes the Patronus charms are just the wisp of silver smoke. And then the most powerful, when they're in their most powerful form, they are the animal form. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the animal can change based on how powerful you need it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool to think about. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We should talk about, I'm really excited by the prospect of like assigning some Patronuses and demons to characters from opposite books, mm-hmm. actually. Yes. So can we do that?
Yeah, yes, of course.
Please. Okay, I love this game.
Let's start by giving some demons to Harry Potter characters.
Mm, okay.
So, who are we starting with?
So, I have some ideas for, like, Harry and Hermione and Dumbledore.
Okay.
But that's it.
Go ahead. Tell us what you're thinking.
Okay. So, I don't know, like, where this came from, but when I was thinking about what Harry's demon would be, like, the first thing that came to mind was a marmoset.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I was like, do I even know anything about marmosets? Like, why am I thinking this? But, like, you know, I have absorbed a lot of information passively in my life that just sort of, like, lives in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So then I went and was looking up about them, and it feels really right. Like, they have these very beautiful, bonded family relationships and, like, extended communities that, you know, it's just like really lovely and feels very much like something that Harry desperately needs. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like something that, you know, embodies that need feels accurate. Mm-hmm. And also they're really good dads. And I feel like good dads is a big theme in Harry's life.
Yeah.
They're like shockingly attentive and like active participant dads for like the animal kingdom.
I was going to say that it's relatively rare for the animal kingdom to be like, yes, you're very present as a father.
Yeah. Right. And I guess I should also say, I have this theory that your Patronus demon, like their personality represents your moon sign and that like you are your sun sign. Which is why, like, Lyra is clearly a Sagittarius, whereas Pan is very obviously a Virgo. So, like, and I don't think that necessarily is, like, the animal has to in some way, like, match what your moon sign is. But Harry's moon is in Pisces, and that, like, feels very right to, like, you know, Pisces are very, like, as a Pisces, we're very, like, emotionally needy and, like, need a lot of like love and support to like be well, and so this like critter that has these beautiful family relationships where they get a lot of love and support just by like the nature of how they exist also feels right in that way.
Yeah that's a really cool that's one really for cute. Harry actually.
I'm trying to like picture a marmoset as well, like they're quite like
little monkey vibes.
Yeah, right? Just the kind of like, just like, I don't know, I feel like it's a very convenient demon, right, for like getting around, living your life as a wizard as well. Like, I feel like it's quite a good choice.
Yeah, it'd be really easy to take a demon on a broom with you.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or take a marmoset on a broom with you. My brain is like...
It's early in the morning for you. We get it. It is. We're totally with you usually when we record early. It's chaos.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my go-to, if you'd have just said, like, what's Harry? My main things of like Harry have been like, I just find him like quite annoying when I read the books now. So I'll be like, what would be an animal that would fit some of that, like, levels of, like, yeah, kind of entitlement that he's got going on, like obliviousness to everything. I'm like, what would that be? And I was picturing, like, maybe quite a small yappy dog. Like, I don't know why. Oh, actually, no, it's a sausage dog, because every sausage dog I've ever met has been, like, quite aloof, quite needy,
very quite, entitled,
like, protective of their people, but also yeah, quite entitled, and, like, mm-hmm, they don't know how good they have it, and they don't know how spoiled they are, really, even though obviously Harry is, like, he's been through a lot, and we understand that, but, like, also he's loaded and just doesn't realize it, like, he barely takes advantage of it or, like, helps the people in his life in the ways that he probably should, with the yeah, amount of wealth that he seems to be sitting on, and, like, a lot of the entitlement that comes with that, and, like, yeah, just kind of some of that, like, aloof obliviousness, maybe a little dashened.
Yeah. So I'm going to take us away from Harry for a second. When I thought about assigning demons to Harry Potter characters, the first person that came into my head was Voldemort. I was like, what has happened with Voldemort? He, in my head, what he becomes after he is Tom Riddle, he must have gone through a demon separation. Like, I just think for how he acts, his entire being of, like, not even being really human anymore, I feel like a demon separation would have been in there somewhere. And that would have actually been a really interesting addition to the books, I guess. Also,
I guess that's, like, could be comparable to making Horcruxes. Yeah.
Literally just going to say, like, with Nagini being a Horcrux, like,
yeah,
what's the parallels there? That's quite interesting.
Also, the uncanniness that Voldemort has that, like, unsettles people, that exists in the His Dark Materials world when people interact with folks who don't have a demon or who have separated from their demon. They feel, like, the uncanniness to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think his demon would be a snake, though, surely? Or do you think he'd want
that? Would be, like, my immediate go-to, I think. Yeah. But I think I could probably, if I, like, really, really sat down and thought about it, maybe there would be a better option. But snake works, doesn't it? Just because of Nagini, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he definitely created a demon for himself with Nagini, for sure. Mm-hmm. I like to imagine that I feel like Voldemort would have had, like, a terrible relationship with his demon, and I can imagine his demon actually being something that would, like, that he would feel shame about, like, something, like, really sweet and really cuddly that, like, represented the, like, hurt child that resulted in him becoming what he was.
Yeah, that's really
which then, like, yeah, I'm gonna slice it up into 7 parts and put it in a bunch of objects also kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it's like Mrs. Coulter vibes, kind of. Her relationship, I imagine. Maybe Voldemort would have had a similar relationship to his demon as what Mrs. Coulter has with hers. I wonder whether it would go as the comparison would go as far as Voldemort's demon not speaking. But I don't know. But yeah, it's an interesting comparison. I love the idea of like young Tom Riddle's demon being something like really, really cute. I love that.
But that would help because he was very good at being quite a disarming person as a teenager, and being quite, and like, you might be, there is like a tendency in Lyra's world to like judge people a little bit by their demon. Like if their demon is a snake, you might assume something about them, like all the Magisterium have like spiders and beetles as demons, and that's how you know they're the bad guys. So like if Voldemort had like a spider or a snake, maybe people would be more suspicious of him than if he had just like a little doe-eyed deer or something, right. And then it becomes even more symbolic when if he's going to like have to sacrifice that deer in order to like Willow and Buffy, like in order to like achieve what he wants and gain the like separation from that part of himself, and also kind of symbolically a sacrifice.
Yeah,
what an intense character to pick a demon for. Thanks, Faye.
Sorry, my brain went there immediately.
Just I love it.
To that end though, of like evil people having like evil demons, I do think it would be really fun for Dumbledore to have like a snake for a demon, because he's like, I'm such a good, and he is a good guy, but he has like terrible methods. Yeah. And I think it would be like really fun for people to be like, what the fuck, like how dare you have a snake demon, like now I don't know what to do with you. And
there's something,
read the
like
books more closely.
Yeah, there's something like a little bit off here, like what is it. Yeah for sure.
And also, like, what's all this, like, what's all the snake and spider hate? Like, there's a lot to be said for people being judged for their demons. And like, I guess Phil never gets into it in the books of like, how's about we don't judge the person with the spider? Because actually tarantulas are cute and fuzzy. Sorry, Faye. I know you're not a spider person. But like, or like, you know, actually snakes like need warmth and like thrive on warmth and actually are really loving creatures. Like if you have them as pets and stuff. So like, there's a lot to be said for like the judging a book. Like, oh, evil person, give them an evil animal. And it's like, I wonder, I don't know how much it should matter what your demon is, but while we're stereotyping animals, yes, Dumbledore would definitely have something that's like secretly shady.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, definitely.
So for time purposes, let's do some Patronuses.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which I, did I make a, yes, I did make some, a list of some ideas that I had, but I want to hear any ideas that you folks have first.
I think Lyra would just have Yorick as her Patronus.
I thought
she'd
the exact
just conjure herself an armored bear whenever she felt that she needed it. Because, like, he's her, like, he's basically her, like, living real life Patronus. Like,
that's so funny. I thought books. The exact same thing. I was like, I think Lyra would just, an armored bear or Yorick. Can it be a particular, like, entity, I guess? Like, but if not, then an armored bear for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a moment. I haven't read the books in like a couple of years, but there's a moment where like Pan is trying to protect Lyra from something and he like turns into some sort of like big cat.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in that moment, he's serving the function that Patronuses serve.
Yes.
And so I was like, that's definitely Lyra's Patronus.
Yeah. Mm. My other thought was to be big cat or Wolverine or a Wolverine would be a good one.
Yeah, it would.
For Lyra.
Yeah, we love Pan's quite often a wildcat when he feels like protective of Lyra. So like wildcat Pan or like mini leopard. He's been a mini leopard quite a lot recently, which I think serves the same purpose.
Yeah, something ferocious and or cat based. If it's not if it's not Yorick or an armored bear, then definitely cat based, I think. Feline for sure.
But then and then so if we're thinking about Will as well. My immediate instinct, I know that his demon is a cat, but sorry for our listeners that might be thinking of that as a spoiler. We should add a spoiler warning at the beginning of this. But I think in terms of where I was coming from with my thoughts on Patronuses being something that conjures like a comforting or like happy, sad memory that gives you strength, like he has such an affinity with cats and like especially if he's thinking about how like Moxie was so protective of him and like thinking of his family cat, like I do think maybe Will would also have a cat as his Patronus.
Yeah. Yeah. That fits.
I would like to propose hyena.
Ooh.
Which are cats, or they're much more closely related to cats than dogs.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Cause Will does have, we've discussed this like many times. Like Will does have that like kind of violent aura about him sometimes. Like he is quite quick to either think about violence or resort to violence from, you know, having such a difficult childhood and trying to keep it under control. And I feel like that's kind of very hyena like in terms of their willingness to just get in a scrap.
Right. And they also, I mean, are like, have like these really close family units and are like super, super smart and resourceful. I don't know. It just like just vibes for me.
Mm, I think that's a good shout. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I think that Mrs. Coulter would not be able to cast a Patronus.
Yeah. I think that she would be a very accomplished witch. And I think that she might have been able to cast a Patronus at some point in her life. And then there would be a point where she would stop being able to do it. I'd have to like have more of a think about when I think that point would be. But I think there would come a point where she would stop being able to cast it for sure. Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think Asriel would always be able to, and he'd probably rub it in her face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's a dick.
Yeah.
And his Patronus would be something like overly confident, like an eagle. Or something like something that like symbolizes like overly confident brohood. Like
Yeah, that's
100% accurate.
And he'd be like really smug about it as well. Like, oh, I'm just symbolizing freedom in everything that I ever do while also oppressing a bunch of people.
Asriel is secretly American, is that the message that we're
Yes.
I mean, it checks out.
Yeah.
I think that Mary's would be a pig because it feels very contrary to have a pig Patronus.
Yes.
Be like they have bad reputations, but they're actually like sweet and cute and smart. And like that feels very her vibe.
Yeah, it does. It does. Oh, that would be great. I feel like Mary would love that as well. She definitely loved that her Patronus was a pig.
Do you think there would be a chance that after, it depends whether we think of the Malefa as people or animals, I guess they're much more people. I don't know if you could cast a Patronus to look like a person, but I wonder if after her encounter with the Malefa, her like strong emotional bond with them would potentially make one of those be her Patronus.
I mean, I think that if you think you can cast an armored bear as a Patronus, then you have to think that you can cast people as Patronuses.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that checks out, like when Tonks's Patronus eye roll, giant eye roll, turns into a werewolf. Because Lupin dumps them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The wishy-washiness of the rules on these things. We just love it when an author's super wishy-washy with it.
I know. So we are coming up on our time limit. Is there anything else that either of you think we should touch on before we wrap up?
I mean, this is a massive topic, but I did just want, because Lark, I'd love to hear your opinion on this. There's such, with Philip Pullman, there's a lot put on the gendering of demons. So if you are a woman, your demon would be a man and vice versa. There is mentioned, like maybe once, I think, that somebody has the same gendered demon as them. It's brushed across like really suddenly and you don't really hear about it again. We don't have a similar thing with Patronuses, right? They're not particularly, they do have gender, because I suppose, you know, Der Stag, that kind of vibe, but it doesn't depend on the person that's casting it. I mean, Rach and I have had so many conversations about demons and gender and, you know, what if you're trans? What if you're non-binary?
Why has it got to be a binary?
Yeah, exactly. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I've always loved the idea that, like, you would basically, like, know you were trans from, like, the moment you understood the idea of gender because of the gender of your patron or your demon. God, I can't keep these words straight. Because I think that that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, the changeability of, like, young people's demons also could, like, adapt. Like, the demon's gender could potentially, like, shift as, like, a kid's, you know, idea of their identity shifted.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that trans people would have the correct gendered demons. Yeah. And I think that, like, gender fluid and gender queer people would have gender fluid and gender queer demons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. if your demon's going to be able to change shape, like, it's a magical thing made of dust. Like, of course it should just represent exactly what it needed to about you as a person. And yeah, why would that have to be in a strict gender binary or not change when you change as a person? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you folks have listened to our episodes where we talked about the Chuck Tingle Harry Potter parody books.
That's like literally one of the next episodes that is on as I've been listening through to you. I'm like, I'm a good year behind, I think. I'm in like last year's Pride episodes or maybe the year before. I'm so far behind. Yes.
That's fine. They're wonderful. He's like maybe the best human that has ever existed. But a thing that he like really comes back to when talking about transness in those books is like gender is like what your soul is. Mm-hmm. Like nothing else matters. And I think that it doesn't matter what Philip Pullman has to say about any of that. Like he created the rules of this world in which your demon is a part of your soul. And like represents you in that way. So even if you are an adult with a fixed demon, if you are a gender fluid person, your demon's gender is going to shift based on where your gender is that day. If you are non-binary, you're going to have a non-binary demon. Mm-hmm. Like that just that follows the rules of the world that he made, even if like he doesn't know or acknowledge that, like,
yeah,
we don't have to do any work like we do with Harry Potter to be like, here's why this thing, mm-hmm. like, you're like, nope, you set the parameters, we're just following your rules.
Yeah,
this is how that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
yeah, that's yeah. really interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, me too.
Cool. Okay, this was the funnest.
It was
thank
so
you
fun.
So much.
Thank you
much.
For having us.
Thank you for having us.
Do you want to just really quick, like, say where our listeners can find you on the internet?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So we are together. We're Her Dark Materials. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at HDMPod. And you can go to our website, which is hdmpod.co.uk.
All right. Thank you all so much for listening to that part of the conversation. Don't go away, because now me and Jesse are going to reflect on the conversation and we're going to tell you a bunch of cool stuff. So, like, sit tight. I will say right now, though, everything you need to know in terms of, like, finding everyone is in the show notes. There are tons of links there. Click, click, click. Okay. Yes, Jesse, let's start with your thoughts on the Voldemort thing.
Okay. How do I want to say this? I love the idea of young Tom Riddle having something cuddly and approachable as his demon in her, because, like, as part of the very charming head boy vibe he has going on. I think as a Slytherin, I think he could still have a snake or reptile as his demon and for it to still make sense. I did not Google, which is what I want to do this morning, which is cutest snake. But I think what comes to mind immediately is those, like, sort of like neon green tree snakes that kind of like you'll see them hanging their coils on either side of a branch. They just look like something out of a children's storybook.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like there's definitely something that doesn't necessarily have to be like a mammal that he could have that would be like charming and disarming, but maybe still something that he's sort of like, why couldn't you be a fucking scorpion or something, you know?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Whatever sort of tough, you know, unapproachable bullshit Tom Riddle would tell himself that he thinks he is, versus a sort of like, I don't know, anime kawaii snake, like snake. That's not how you pronounce that. The like kind of like cutesy big eye push, if like Pusheen was like a snake is sort of what I'm envisioning.
Okay
or something, you know, like just something super cute and he's just like, oh wow, you're so cute, it's not who we are. Yeah. And sort of on the flip side of that is thinking about Dumbledore, because I feel like in my brain I've always sort of envisioned Dumbledore as like having like a sheep or a ram as his demon, just because they look very cute and fluffily but are fucking assholes, you know?
Interesting. Would that have fucked up his relationship with his like goat obsessed brother though?
I think that it would be even more of a reason for him to distance himself from Aberforth, who definitely has a goat for a demon.
Okay interesting. All right,
because I guess it's like hard to say if like, because we just don't see very many families, together families, in his Dark Materials to say if, like, there are, like, family similarities between, like, your demons or not, you know?
I mean, Lyra's family, I would say, definitely would be a no.
Yeah.
You have, like, a big cat, a monkey, and a lemur.
Right.
Wait, that's not the word I mean. A polecat. That's it.
He's a pine marten.
Yeah,
actually.
Same difference.
So a weasel, essentially. A giant weasel. But yeah. And I even feel like just with like Dumbledore's character of being keeping himself so guarded and like close to the chest, that he would definitely have something where you couldn't tell what he was thinking or feeling just from like looking at his demon.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
But still like someone who's like, whatever it is about Dumbledore that makes people be like, I trust you implicitly, even though I really probably shouldn't.
Right,
if
right,
I
right.
thought about what you were telling me for more than like 5 seconds, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I like that.
I don't know. What a complicated dude Dumbledore is.
I want to know if you laughed out loud at the revelation that Azrael is American.
I laughed so hard. Because the minute you said that he would have something like an eagle, I was like, wait, was that you who said that?
It was Rach that said that.
Right, when Rach said that, I was like, oh my God, that is the most true thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
I know. Yeah. Oh my God. Every time I've thought about it, I've just like started laughing.
I mean, I think also just because his whole vibe is sort of the vibe of, if you could imagine him somehow just driving the biggest like V8 truck into everything and be like, I'm here to save the day, everyone. Don't worry. And yeah. It's like, my dude, what?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so you wanted to talk about the gender thing too, right?
Yes, I did want to talk about the gender thing a little bit because as everyone should be aware right now, animals are like my top special interest. And as someone who thinks about the construction of sexuality and gender a lot, also the sort of intersections about how the overlap about thinking about people as mammals and just like in, you know, the ways in which genitals and sex work in the animal world means that there's a lot of animals that don't have what we would consider a like binary gender, mm-hmm. you know? Are animals that change their physiological sex depending on. And it's like, people could just have those things as their demons and just to be like, yeah, look at this cool frog, that's my demon. Like, I'm fucking gender fluid like my fucking soul is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, what if you had like a demon where it just reproduced asexually and it's just like, cool, what's my gender? You're not gonna fucking find out, are you? Look at my cool anemone that I have in a jar that I wear on my neck or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I just love a magical method of like transgender confirmation, you know?
Yeah.
Which is something that I didn't say in the conversation with them that I like later was like, oh, I wish I had brought that up because it is one of my favorite things. Like us talking about like the stairs at Hogwarts or like Hagrid and the unicorns, like this thing that's like magically externally like confirming what you know to be true about yourself is just one of my favorite things that can happen in a magic world.
Yeah, and I feel that especially since we don't see that trope happen a lot with trans people, that's why I'm like, yes, bring it on. Like, for people who are not our patrons, I wrote a fanfic about this, or not a fanfic, an original short about a gender-affirming magical dragon. Mm-hmm. So
it's so good. I cried. It was so good.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Do you want to say anything else about the episode?
I mean, the episode's great, as everyone has just listened to. I think those are the couple of things that, like, stuck out to me. It's just like, oh, I wish I was here for this conversation. But write into us if you want us to assign demons to other things that we talk about on these podcasts.
Ooh, yeah.
I think I told you, Lark, in a chat that I'm pretty sure that, like, Steed Bonnet has a poodle, would have a poodle demon. Did I tell you this?
Did. You did.
And I'm just like, tell me I'm wrong, everyone.
Amazing. All right, so let's talk about what we've got coming up this fall. For anyone who is not currently a patron of ours, a thing that Jesse has been doing this summer is watching Our Flag Means Death on Discord with our patrons every week. And that's obviously wrapped up now that Hot Pirate Summer is over. And also there are only 10 episodes of that show. And we decided, in honor of both my current hyperfixation and back to school season, that we are going to watch Heartstopper with our patrons this fall. We're doing that Tuesdays, right? Tuesdays, yes. At 4 my time, 7 Jesse's time, being Pacific and Eastern respectively. yeah, we do those on Discord. It's going to be really cute. I will be there for those, dropping all of my, I have watched this like over 100 times at this point and read so many interviews, insights into the chat as we watch.
I'm so excited.
Really fun. So many things to say.
Yeah. So if you're having mixed feelings about people trying to declare like September and September 1st Harry Potter stuff, you could join us for a lovely queer time.
Mm-hmm. The first one of those is going to be 2 weeks from today is when that's going to be, because we have to announce it on Escape from Reality first as well to give everyone time to join us. In non-Patreon land, but also in back-to-school theme land, we're doing a cool sticker thing. Namely, there are leftovers every month from our sticker club because I have to order enough for like anyone new who joins during that month. So through the end of September, those leftovers are going to be available in our shop. They're there until they're gone. There's like 5 of some and as many as like 20 of others. So, you know, get them while you can. There's also a sale. So if you buy 4 of them, the 5th one is free. And they're really neat. Also, any that don't sell by the end of September still are gone forever. I will, I don't know, give them to people as presents or put them in bathrooms or something. But it's a one-time opportunity. So check that out in our shop. Again, linked in the show notes. And last thing that we're going to talk to you about today is the thing that we've been up to not just this summer, but like since January of last year.
Yes, we have been working on a fan coalition with Fandom Forward, formerly the Harry Potter Alliance. So we've been working with Fandom Forward and some friends of the pod and some other like rad folks to come up with some best practices ideas for fandom spaces, or really any kind of space where you're getting together with people over a creative pursuit or a shared passion. And if you caught our episode with Which Please, we're talking a little bit about it, you may have heard a little bit of this, but we want to make sure that you all knew that it was a thing that we were doing this year, and it's super rad.
Yeah, like we as a coalition have heard from folks as disparate as like, you know, running like 10 person D&D groups to people with like massive followings who are like, this has helped me so much. So basically, if you are a leader or even just a participant in any sort of fandom space, this guide is here to like help you do that the most ethically. Like, how do you make the world a better place through fandom is the goal of the guide. Everyone should just check it out. Like, you are a part of fandom because you're here listening to this conversation right now. So that means that it is a conversation, or it's a guide for you.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And as someone who's been in a lot of fan communities in a wide variety of online spaces, it's sometimes it's hard to know what to do when, you know, something that you're in goes from like, everyone's on the same page to like, oh, we're not on the same page and everyone's fighting and now there is tension and I don't know how to deal with this. And this guide is a really excellent way of handling that sort of like those like inevitable interpersonal conflicts without it being like, this is someone's fault, or I gotta shut my whole community down, or I gotta like, you know, whatever, what have you kind of deal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's also just super accessible, which I really appreciate. It's really made for like anyone at any level of fandom or leadership or whatever to be able to use equally. Yeah, cool. That's it. I think that's it for this week.
I think that's it.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks with our first actual chapter episode of our fall return, and until then, go listen to the Gay Pirate Podcast.